Gentlemen, thank you all for standing by. I'd like to inform all participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's call, at which time you may press star followed by one to ask a question. Today's call is also being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may now disconnect at this time. I'd like to now turn the call over to Mr. John Leslie with NOAA's Office of Communication. Thank you, sir, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, operator, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for dialing in to this pre-launch media teleconference for the Cosmic 2 mission, which is now scheduled to lift off no earlier than June 24th from Cape Canaveral, Florida, aboard a SpaceX Falcon Heavy rocket. And here to talk more about the importance of the Cosmic 2 mission are two NOAA experts, Dr. El-Sayed Talat, Director of the Office of Projects, Planning, and Analysis at NOAA's Satellite and Information Service, and Dr. Daryl Kleist, Physical Scientist at NOAA's Environmental Modeling Center. After we hear from both speakers, we'll open up for your questions on the phone. And we'll start now with Dr. El-Sayed Talat.
Good morning. NOAA is looking forward with great anticipation to the launch of the Cosmic 2 mission. It's going to happen in just a couple of weeks. COSMIC, which stands for the Constellation Observing System for Meteorology, Ionosphere, and Climate, is a true international partnership between NOAA, the U.S. Air Force, and Taiwan. In Taiwan, the COSMIC 2 mission is also known as Formosat 7. So when you see Formosat 7, you know you're talking about the same mission. And this mission contains six satellites, each about the size of your average kitchen stove, that will orbit the planet around the equator, taking valuable measurements of the tropics and subtropics, the regions where tropical storms and hurricanes form. As I said, COSMIC 2 Formosat 7 is jointly sponsored by NOAA and the Taiwan National Space Organization as designated representatives of the American Institute in Taiwan and the Taipei Economic and Cultural Representative Office in the United States. And once launched in orbit, these six satellites, the COSMIC 2 Formosat 7 mission, will be owned and operated by the authorities in Taiwan and will undergo early checkout, calibration, and validation process for approximately 7 months before their data are declared operational. And this data is going to provide high-resolution water vapor information, which will help meteorologists better observe, research, and forecast hurricanes, typhoons, and other potentially deadly destructive storms. It's going to provide temperature and pressure information also in the lower atmosphere and electron density measurements in the upper atmosphere. This is really welcome news for us because especially coming on the heels of the hurricane seasons, the past two hurricane seasons within in the last 2 years alone have produced horrific storms that have impacted the U.S., including Harvey, Maria, Irma, Florence, and Michael. And NOAA is going to use the data from the COSMIC 2 Formosat 7 mission to test and improve its climate models to better understand and long-term variations in the Earth's climate. And just as equally, it's important to note that COSMIC 2 will also enable crucial monitoring of the ionosphere for the effects of solar storms and solar flares that can disrupt our navigation and communication systems and jeopardize our power grids. Now, COSMIC 2 does this using a special technique called radio occultation. The satellites will collect signals from the Global Navigation Satellite System, also GNSS, and that includes our system, the U.S. Global Positioning System, or GPS, that are bent as they travel through the Earth's atmosphere. The bending of this signal gives scientists an indication of the temperature, pressure, and moisture content of the atmosphere. And NOAA is going to incorporate this data along with data from NOAA's polar orbiting satellites and that from our other U.S. and international partners into our weather and space weather prediction models, giving meteorologists a greater ability to produce life-saving forecasts. Again, we're really excited and looking forward to the launch of COSMIC 2 and the many impactful benefits of its data and operation. And we're a go for launch. And now I'll pass it on to Daryl Kleist.
Good morning and thank you. So here at the National Weather Service, we're also very excited about the launch of COSMIC 2. We rely critically on numerical forecast models to help predict the weather from everything from hours out to weeks into the future. And of course, observations are a key component to our modeling. Observations of the atmosphere are necessary for forecast models to be able to make such predictions and what is likely to occur in the future. Over the years, the types and quality of instruments that collect such observations have changed significantly, as have the methods that we use to analyze, assimilate, and exploit these observations. This, of course, has led to improved initial conditions, which we use to initialize our forecast models. COSMIC-1 has been an example of such a new technique being used to improve the quality and impact from such atmospheric observations. COSMIC-1 radio occultation observations not only have proven to be highly accurate, but because they are calibrated, have been beneficial to provide a reference to calibrate other observations, such as infrared and microwave satellite sounders. GPS radio occultation has been shown to have some of the largest mean influence among satellite observations on global initial conditions, ranking as one of the top contributors to reducing short-term forecast errors. This is in part because of their inherent low bias and their ability to be used in the presence of clouds and precipitation. We've been integrating COSMIC-1 data into our numerical weather prediction models since 2007. Its unique characteristics of high accuracy and very high vertical resolution complement the other satellite observations we use in our models. At its peak, COSMIC-1 was providing approximately 1,500 high-quality profiles per day from the six satellites. However, COSMIC-2 will be even better. Thanks to the technical improvements to the instrumentation on the satellites, we are hoping to be receiving approximately 5,000 profiles per day. The COSMIC-2 data stream will also be of high quality, just like COSMIC-1, but with a more sensitive receiver capable of making measurements in the lowest and moist layer of the atmosphere to improve the accuracy of our weather forecast model, initial conditions, and subsequent forecasts. The observations gathered will largely be in the tropics and subtropics, a critical area of the globe for improving our initial conditions, especially given the teleconnections to mid-latitudes and other parts of the globe. COSMIC-2 observations will be fed into our supercomputers and assimilated into our operational forecast models within 30 minutes of being taken. We've done some pre-launch simulations that have demonstrated significant improvements to our numerical forecasts, particularly in the tropics, and we look forward to realizing these improvements in our operational predictions. In addition to the modeling, COSMIC-2 will help detect the effects of geomagnetic and solar storms within our atmosphere. In conclusion, COSMIC-2 will be an essential part of our global observing system. While we can't escape the weather, if we know what's coming, we can prepare for it. And COSMIC-2 will help us better predict by improving our initial conditions and subsequent forecasts. That concludes my remarks, so back to you, John.
Thank you very much, Darrell. Right now, we're at the point where we can take questions from reporters on the phone. So, operator, would you please let everyone know how they can ask a question, and please queue up the first one.
I would be more than happy to, Mr. Leslie. Actually, we already have someone queued up, but before we get to that, to ask a question over the phone, please press star followed by one, and then you may ask, and then when I introduce your name, I will open up your line, and you may ask your question. Mr. Peter King from CBS News, you are first. Your line is now open.
Great. Thank you, and good morning, gentlemen. This is a three-part question. I'm looking for, A, the cost of this, B, how long will these satellites last, and C, how far apart will these satellites be once they're in orbit and fully deployed?
Hi, Peter. This is Alfeit Talat at NOAA, and the cost of the NOAA's portion of the COSMIC-2 cost is $75 million. And that includes costs incurred to date, beginning in 2014, we started implementation of this mission, plus the estimated costs through FY24, through the 5 years of operation. And that's how long that the mission life of the COSMIC-2 satellites is going to be. It's going to be 5 years in orbit. The satellites are going to take about 18 months to separate into their different orbit planes, and they will be about 2 hours in local time separated around the globe. So there's six satellites in six different orbit planes.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Stephanie Clark from Base Flight Now. Ma'am, your line is
four.
Open.
Oh. 4 hours separated between each set. No, sorry, I said it right. 6 hours, 6 hours. 2 hours separated in the six orbit planes. So second-guessing myself, my math here.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Our next question comes from Stephen Clark. I read that wrong. I do apologize. From Base Flight Now. Sir, your line is now open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I was wondering if one of you could go into a little more detail about the impact to hurricane forecasts you expect to see from COSMIC-2 data. We're talking about better forecasting of intensity or track or just some metrics on what you hope to see from the data. And also, given the long wait to launch these satellites, just curious when the satellites were completed and how long they were in storage before being called up for the launch campaign. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, this is Daryl. So unfortunately, it's a difficult question to answer in terms of quantifying anticipated reduction in forecast error. However, because these observations will largely be bounded to the tropics and they're highly sensitive to temperature and moisture, we will be able to constrain the moisture initial conditions used in our prediction models, which will really help, we suspect, especially in Genesis prediction. In terms of impacts on hurricane tracks, we have yet to do a study to be able to realize what that is actually going to look like in terms of any quantifiable metrics.
And so regarding to the satellites, we were obviously in close coordination with the U.S. Air Force, who's launching COSMIC-2, about when the launch is going to be. So we were able to time the final closeout of the satellites pretty closely to when the launch was anticipated to happen. And so we finished closeout of satellites in the fall of last year and transported them over in April of this year. Now they've been in storage at the Cape for a few months to launch.
Did that answer your question, Mr. Clark?
Yes. One more, if I could, though. Can you update us on the status of the COSMIC-1 satellites? Are they all still operating, and how long do you expect them to continue?
Right now, there's only two of the original six COSMIC-1 satellites are functional, and only part-time due to the weakening of their aging batteries. We're still using whatever data we get from them because the data is still accurate and useful as ever. The instruments are working fine. It's just the lifetime of the satellites. It greatly exceeded the lifetime of the expected lifetime of the satellite, so it's very successful in that sense. We also get radio occultation data from other satellites that partially make up the loss of the four COSMIC-1 satellites. These include the GRASS instruments on the Europe's MEDOP series of satellites, A, B, and C, Korea's COMSAT-5 satellite, and soon we're going to add radio occultation from the PAZ, P-A-Z, satellite from Spain.
Just to follow up, this is Daryl. So we are still assimilating operationally radio occultations from one of the COSMIC ones. We are getting several hundred profiles per day of very high quality, which is great because even COSMIC-1 is significantly past its life mission, and we hope we can achieve the same in COSMIC-2. In terms of some of the other observations, COMSAT will become operational sometime this summer.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Glenn Farley from King Television Seattle. Sir, your line is now open.
Hi, how are you, if you can hear me? So, man, I have so many questions, but let me go to something specific. This is basically you're covering from about 40 degrees north to 40 degrees south. Seattle is at 47, so we're a little above that. However, the kinds of storms that we get hit here, particularly in the winter, these atmospheric rivers which come from the south, how do you see this helping make those forecasts better for those kinds of events that hit us? And now we're in a summer situation where we're looking at drier air, drier climate conditions, and increased wildfire risk. So even though we're out of the range, it's not like we're not influenced by what is further to the south.
Hi, this is Daryl responding to the question. So one of the things we are most anticipating from COSMIC-2 is the ability to have better initial conditions of tropical and subtropical moisture in the lower troposphere, which of course is critical for the prediction of atmospheric river events like the ones you were describing, or the connections between the tropics and extratropics in terms of the prediction of long standing droughts, et cetera. So we anticipate that we will have improved forecasts of such events because of the direct benefit from the COSMIC-2 mission.
So perfect. So here's another question. I spent a lot of time over the last couple of years working on the GOES satellites. We spent some time in Colorado looking at those under construction. That's given us a lot of high-resolution imagery, et cetera. How do you see this sort of interfacing with GOES specifically, or is this just more tools in the toolbox?
This is Daryl again. So I view it as more tools in the toolbox, with one exception in that because these observations are so well calibrated, they are particularly useful for helping to intercalibrate other observations. So for the assimilation of GOES-based information, we can rely on the unbiased COSMIC observations to then further help improve how we use the GOES information.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Megan Bartel from stace.com. Ma'am, your line is now open.
Thanks so much. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. So I'm sorry if I am repeating a little bit, but I wanted to ask about sort of how the COSMIC-2 data will fit into the other weather monitoring satellites that NOAA runs and sort of what this adds and how it broadens the picture of hurricanes.
I can start, Daryl, and then you can add. This is I'll say it a lot. So as Daryl mentioned, COSMIC-2 provides a calibration source essentially for our other sounding instruments on our LEO and geostationary platforms. So as a way of calibrating between the microwave and the infrared measurement, COSMIC radio occultation.
I have no idea how it solicits from you.
I'm sorry? Say that again?
Sorry, I was talking to the operator separated.
Oh okay. And but independently of the kind of the intercalibration aspect, it provides us a wealth of data. The coverage that you get from the radio occultation in the low latitudes is for by itself going to be and especially as it goes down lower into the lower troposphere, into the troposphere, I should say, it's going to give us unique measurements that add to the measurements that we get from the LEO and GEO platforms. For the ionosphere, this is data that we're not getting in a comprehensive sense from any other source. So we don't have the coverage that we do of the profiles and the measurements in the ionosphere at low latitudes that we are going to get from COSMIC-2. And this is going to be essentially the big delta step that we can to start our ionospheric assimilation model operationally at our Space Weather Prediction Center.
Great. Thank you so much.
This is Daryl, just with one additional follow-up. So in terms of the weather modeling, another unique aspect that is critically important is the very high vertical resolution of these observations. So COSMIC-2 will really help us further constrain vertical profiles of temperature, pressure, and humidity in our models.
Great.
As a reminder, to ask a question over the phone, please press star followed by 1, and you will be joined in the queue. Our next question comes from Jeff Tolson from Nature Magazine. Sir, your line is now open.
Hello. Thanks for the call today. I'm wondering if you can, if one of you could speak to the pilot program that NOAA has going on with radio occultation measurements from commercial providers. Can you talk about, you know, how that's going, how those measurements compare to these, and what the future of this looks like?
So you're talking about the commercial weather data pilot, where in round two, and it's well underway, and radio occultation data has come into NOAA for evaluation. We can't really talk about the results just yet. We plan to finalize round two in early 2020 and report results shortly thereafter. And using that evaluation, we expect to be able to make a decision on pursuing radio occultation data purchases for use for NOAA operational products and services in the future. Do you want a follow-up question to what I just said? And this, I'll say it, by the way. I should have said that.
I guess if you've got a little bit more detail in terms of what kind of data has come in, how much data from, you know, covering what period of time and from which companies. I understand that there are three involved, so I assume those are them. If you can provide any more information about the coverage of that data and what this kind of program might look like going forward, assuming that it does go forward in the future, that would be helpful.
I think I'll have to refer those kind of detailed questions to our point of contact for the commercial, to John, and figure out how much we can say about the proprietary, you know, information out of that pilot.
Okay, yeah. I can follow up. So the other thing I wanted to ask is the second portion of the original Cosmic 2, which I guess was polar orbiting satellites. As I understand it, that is not moving forward. I don't know if it's completely taken off the table or if that's still waiting in the wings for someday. Can you talk to that a little bit? And then, you know, is there a way to kind of talk about what's being lost from not having the polar orbiting satellites and only having the tropical and subtropical coverage?
So, yes, it was a joint decision between the U.S. and Taiwan not to pursue the another six satellites in polar orbit for cosmic for follow on beyond the equatorial orbits that we have now. We are mitigating that with our partnership measurements from, as I mentioned, from MEDOP, from COMSAT-5, from PAS. We also anticipate more measurements with the European MEDOP second generation series of satellites that will have radio occultation as well. We also are examining whether commercial weather data radio occultation could also fill the need that we have for the polar orbiting satellites, and evaluating also if we want to pursue radio occultation on more either U.S. platforms or partnerships with other international entities.
Gotcha. Thanks.
All right. Are there any more questions?
I apologize. I was on mute. For those who would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one to add to the queue. We do have a few more questions in queue. Our next one comes again from Stephen Clark from Base Flight Now.
Thank you. Two more questions, please. First of all, the follow-up on the commercial weather pilot, I was interested in whether the measurements from Cosmic 2 could fit into the calibration and your studies of the usability of the commercial radio occultation data from your from the ongoing studies there, just how Cosmic 2 will tie into that. And also, just a point of clarification on the partnership between NOAA and Taiwan. What specifically is NOAA providing to the mission, and what was Taiwan's contribution? Thank you.
Okay. So first is the commercial weather data pilot. I mean, right now with the evaluation that's going on is essentially independent of Cosmic 2 data, because we're evaluating whether it meets the requirements that we have for, in general, for radio occultation data for incorporation into our national weather prediction systems. So So, and then COSMIC-2 data will be, I'm sure, a good benchmark for how that performs looking forward in terms of, because COSMIC-2 is new technology. It's an improved radio occultation sensor that gets us lower into the troposphere, and so we can evaluate once we get the data the performance of that versus what commercially available data is right now. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Just was, you know, you guys have mentioned the use of this data for calibration of other instruments. So I was just interested in how, if that would also be ring true with the commercial weather pilot.
In general, the radio occultation measurements are essentially self-calibrating, or they're directly calibrated. So we're not necessarily going to be using COSMIC to calibrate the other radio occultation measurements, but we'll be evaluating the performance of COSMIC versus the performance of any other radio occultation source.
Okay, thank you. And the question on the partnership, just to clarify, what's coming from the U.S. and what's coming from Taiwan for this mission?
So I would say that I'll start with Taiwan. Taiwan is what provided the spacecraft bus, the spacecraft and instrument integration, the satellite system environment and testing. They also provided support on the launch site integration and operations. And once it's in orbit, they're providing the satellite operations and control center. They have their own data management system for data from COSMIC. They're providing ground stations for data acquisition, and obviously mission operations on the satellite side. On the U.S. side, we're providing the instruments on the spacecraft, the launch service, U.S. and then the launch itself. This is when I say U.S. It's both NOAA and the Air Force. U.S. and also U.S. ground stations and international ground stations that we're paying for to get the data, and we have a U.S. data management system and data processing center, and we are distributing the data to the global users. We have an open data policy that's in agreement with Taiwan for the data. We are providing the data archives and data model updates and data verification and validation and project management for all those aspects as well.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from, again, Glenn Farley from King Television Seattle.
Hi, so I'm back. Another project that we looked at out here, because the testing was done here, was the GPM, the Global Precipitation Measurement Satellite, which I think was done with the Japanese. It's been a few years. NOAA was definitely involved in that one as well. Do you see how these two would essentially work together here? Of course, that satellite is just sort of up there by itself, just kind of making just kind of covering the world as it goes around, and it's orbiting. I don't know what you call it, but it kind of covers the whole world, but not nearly as often as this does. Do those two kind of work together for you?
Hi, this is Daryl again. So similar to my response to the previous question, it's certainly going to be true that by having something like COSMIC-2 available to help further calibrate something like what's on board GPM, we could then further make use or better use of such information. But they're sort of sensitive to slightly different things, so they're definitely complementary, and it's not redundant information. So I think COSMIC-2 and the availability of such observations will help accelerate the use of other platforms like GPM.
Excellent. And then finally, the number of, you said you're getting about 5,000 profiles now with Cosmic 2, or you will be getting that. How many profiles were you getting out of Cosmic 1 when all of those satellites were fully operational?
It was right around 1,500 per day.
So this is about three times as much.
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Eli Cao from the National Geographic Taiwan. Sir, your line is now open.
Hello, Dr. Talat, Dr. Kleiss. Thank you for your time today. The first question, I know one of the things you mentioned, the sort of step forward in terms of the instruments on board has allowed for greater vertical resolution of measurements, or like a really high vertical resolution. What is the actual range from in altitude of the measurement that Cosmic 2 will take? And then, sorry, that's the first one. Second one is, what organizations or agencies developed the main instruments, the TGRSSRO antenna, first, the number two, the IVM, and number three, the RF antenna?
I can handle the second one. The TGRS was developed, this is El Sayed, by the way. TGRS was developed by JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, NASA. The IVM was originally developed by UT Dallas, the ion velocity meter, and it was built by Ball Aerospace. And the radio frequency beacon is developed by the Air Force and SRI.
Okay. Thank you. And then, sorry, the first one, the vertical resolution, what altitude to what altitude are you able to get the temp, pressure, humidity measurements?
I need to defer and find some follow-up information on the exact range, mm-hmm. and I don't have the details about the specific vertical resolution either.
Okay. Thank you. A couple of follow-up or other questions. One is, I know one of the, as Dr. Talat, you mentioned, the sort of the huge step forward in is for space weather prediction, space weather forecasting and modeling is the data that will come from Cosmic 2. Who do you see as the most sort of eager potential users of this, of space weather forecasts? Who would benefit the most from having a better, or what groups would benefit from having good space weather forecasting?
Space weather has quite a few stakeholders. And just recently, the International Civil Aviation Organization has set up a global center for space weather alerts and forecasts for their civil aviation members. And that's basically every governmental agency that does civil air traffic. And that's going to be operational in November. And they're keenly interested in any type of communication and navigation disruptions, which that could be caused by the ionosphere, by scintillations and storms in the ionosphere. So that's one stakeholder. The other stakeholder is the power grids in the national power grids and commercial power grids around the world. They're affected by geomagnetically induced currents that are caused by geomagnetic storms or solar storms that impact the Earth, near Earth system, the magnetosphere and the near Earth system. And then what Cosmic 2 allows us is an identification of the effects of those storms to help us predict further how those currents are translated to the ground and possibly into the power grid. And then the satellite industry is interested in it, of course, for, again, navigation and communications, and also any any effects on the upper atmosphere that would change the drag environment for the satellites as they pass through. So those are among the stakeholders that would be interested in ionospheric kind of forecasts and predict now cast and forecasts.
Thank you. If I may, just the final question. Wanted that the ability to sort of kickstart or get the space weather forecasting program going because you have this great, you know, data to populate the models with. That's one. It seems like one of the big breakthroughs with this project. If you had to list out, say, the sort of the top three big steps forward that could result from having Cosmic 2 up there and operational, what would they be?
I think certainly getting lower into the troposphere, and so I think there was a question earlier. I can address it generally, if not specifically, about the range and vertical resolution. The radio occultations happen. We get neutral atmosphere information from 40 kilometers down, all the way down. But what happens, it gets noisier and noisier as you get further down in the atmosphere. And what Cosmic 2 will allow us is that the usable part of those profiles gets lower into the atmosphere than Cosmic 1. And so that's where we anticipate having a greater impact on the models. And then I cheated and looked it up. The vertical resolution is about 100 meters in the lower troposphere. That's what we got from Cosmic 1. So, and we can get, we'll follow up with any changes for Cosmic 2. So that's one great impact that we anticipate is going to have really lasting results for both our understanding and our operational capacity is getting lower into the troposphere. The other is, of course, the coverage that we're going to get at low latitudes. We are concentrated between 40 and 40, but that's an incredible amount of dense coverage that we're going to get in that region. And that's really, I mean, that's the region where hurricanes and tropical storms form. So the understanding and, again, the operational impact that we're going to have from that, we're very excited to see that, really. And so that's another a key advancement that we're going to have from Cosmic 2. And that's both for the neutral and the ionosphere. I mean, Cosmic 1, I can say, revolutionized our understanding of the ionosphere because it gave us a 3D picture that we really didn't have very well characterized before. Cosmic 2 is going to give us that 3D picture with even greater coverage. Not only coverage, but higher resolution in terms of being able to identify and look at the physics of smaller scale features. And these smaller scale features are what cause the communication and navigation disruptions. So we're really getting at the heart of the matter of what we care about when we look at one of the things we care about when we look at the ionosphere in terms from an operational and scientific point of view.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, that just made me think of one small follow-up. These measurements of the ionosphere, some of them are taken using the RO antenna, and some are also with the I guess all three instruments can contribute to that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The RO antenna, the BM, and the RF antenna?
Yeah, so the TGRS, the RO instrument, measures the ionosphere and then the neutral atmosphere down below. And the ion velocity meters measures the ionosphere in situ at the point of the satellite, but also measures a key parameter of the ionosphere, which is the ion drift, the velocity that the ions are traveling in. And again, we're going to have six satellites distributed in local time looking at the ionosphere and measuring the drifts and the densities. And that's unprecedented, really, coverage for low latitude region is key to the global ionospheric structure, because there's a dynamo mechanism that happens at low latitude that basically sets the structure and out into near the mid latitudes as well. And the third instrument is the radio frequency beacon that's going to give us, in coordination with ground stations, going to give us very high detailed resolution of the ionosphere as it passes over a ground station.
Thank you.
So from a scientific standpoint, it's again going to be we're very excited. It's going to be a great boon to ionospheric science and space weather science.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Katie Burzak from Chemical Engineering. Ma'am, your line is now open.
Hi, I'm Katie Burzak from Chemical Engineering News. The last questioner kind of asked what I wanted to ask, but I was just wondering if you could go into more detail about what previous data gathering was being done in the ionosphere and how this adds to that.
Sure. So the ionosphere, we've had from the ground-based standpoint, we have ionosondes that basically measure the ionospheric profile, the bottom side ionospheric profile. They can't see the top side. We also measure the total electron content with ground-based stations that look at they basically do a similar thing to the radio occultation in that they use GPS signals and they look at the delay in the GPS signal and they estimate what the total content of the ionosphere is, basically based on that delay, we have distributed systems around the globe that do that, but the ionosondes are very sporadic measurements around the globe. The TEC, the total electron content measurements, are more distributed uniformly only over land masses. Over the oceans, there's really very little information. In the past, we've had missions that have gone up and probed the ionosphere, but not in they've been on, for instance, low Earth orbiting satellites that do a pass every 90 minutes. And so you have the thermosphere, ionosphere, mesosphere, energetic dynamics, or TIMED, T-I-M-E-D, mission from NASA that looked at that had instruments that measured the ionosphere, and then there's instruments on the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program that are predecessors of the IVM that measured the ionosphere, but these have been on select orbits or select satellites and not given us that global picture or that dense coverage of measurements that we would ideally want for operations. Cosmic One was able to give us that global picture, but as you heard, it's still Cosmic 2 is going to give us a much, much, much more complete picture in terms of resolution and time and temporal activity that is at low latitudes. Recently, the NASA launched the Global Observations of Limb and Disc experiment. That's a hosted payload on a geostationary satellite that is akin to our kind of an experimental upper atmosphere weather satellite that measures the ionosphere and thermosphere globally over the disk. The ionosphere at night, the thermosphere during the day, and then hopefully that continues on during the. For the mission started last year, and it's a two-year mission, and hopefully it continues forward during the Cosmic 2 lifetime. such that we can have collaborative science and measurements from that. And so how that will work together is something that we are eagerly looking forward to, and then our Space Weather Prediction Center is already evaluating this GOLD data, G-O-L-D, GOLD, data for that. And so ionospheric science is alive and well, but with COSMIC-2, we have an opportunity now to take that next step and bring it into kind of a operational capacity, where before we've been doing kind of at the most nowcast of the ionosphere, but a very low resolution. And now we can do nowcast at a higher resolution, and then start that process, start that progress toward getting forecasts.
Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star followed by one. One moment for any other questions. And at this time, I see no further questions in queue.
Okay, operator. Well, if there are no more questions, we'll go ahead and wrap up the call. Again, let me thank our two experts for joining us and for everyone on the phone for dialing in and for your great questions. So for more background information about COSMIC-2 and for updates on the launch, please visit NESDIS, that's N-E-S-D-I-S, NOAA.gov/COSMIC-2. Thank you again, and this concludes the call.
That concludes today's call. You all may now disconnect. Speakers, one moment.